Hello.
Hey, Sherry.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
Morning. That's great. And I'm glad that tech worked right away. So
Yes. She thinks I know I should put on my Alex jacket too. Chilly.
All right. For those of you who are joining us right now, where are you joining us from? Go ahead and drop that in the chat. Kentucky, Utah, nice. We're all over. Love it.
Oh, Spokane would have been their hometown.
I know. I know. It's a shame we can't be in person, but this will do for sure to be able to engage with everyone. All right, there he is. Hey, Brian. All right, Columbus, Ohio.
Here.
Columbus, go Columbus. I'm in Columbus too.
Boy, Texas. Yeah. Awesome.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes. We can hear you. We'll give everyone a couple minutes and we'll start right at the top of the hour. So in the meantime, everyone's telling us where they're joining us from. So we've got quite the variety here.
Is that in the chat?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Grand Rapids, Philadelphia.
Brenda from Colorado, previously Illinois. Nice. Minnesota. Love it. Love it. All right. Yeah. So now that you guys know where most of where the chat is, we'll definitely be using the chat throughout. So make sure that you have that open on the right side of your window. Brian, do you know Brenda? I'm gonna butcher this name. Brenda from on here. I have a Brian. Do you remember me on the chat?
Oh yeah.
Georgia.
Should I respond to her individually? I don't even know how I can do that. So when I launch this, when I launch PowerPoint, it's going to cover up everything. So I'm going to.
Okay. All right. Well, just hold off on sharing just yet, Brian. Yep. We'll go over a couple of housekeeping items and then we'll go ahead and get started. But awesome. Sherry posted in the Amatic session. So we have a whole day of sessions for you guys since we're doing this virtually. So the link that Sherry just posted in the chat is for lists all of the sessions that we have remaining for today. So definitely take a peek at that link and check it out if you want to attend more of them today. We've got a lot of exciting talks planned out for today. And then at the end of our session, we will also share some information about trivia that's happening later this afternoon with the password as well. So definitely want to see you guys there. That'll be fun. But as I mentioned before, go ahead and use the chat. Ask us questions. We definitely want to hear from you guys. There's also a Q&A option there. Sherry's going to be helping me and Brian manage the chat. Sherry's our market development manager. And my name is Marissa Dabalier, and I'm an associate portfolio manager on the math side. So work very closely with these guys. All right. So without further ado, since we are at the top of the hour, I would like to introduce our presenter, Brian Mercer. So I'm so excited to introduce Brian today. He's a tenured professor at Parkland College, and that's in Illinois. And he's also the co-author of several McGraw-Hill books and in the non-STEM course areas. So he's a phenomenal instructor, author, and is a huge sports fan. And I'm very excited for him to share his expertise on non-STEM co-rec resources today. So he'll be going through that. And I know he's very excited to engage with everyone today and definitely ask questions throughout, and we'll be engaging with you guys. So Brian, over to you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I certainly certainly wish we were in person. I can't believe how much I miss being at AMATIC, and I'm sure probably would have seen many of you there. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and get us started. And let's see here. We should be seeing a PowerPoint presentation, hopefully.
Yes, we can see it.
All right, so we'll get started here. And again, thank you for joining us. Please ask any questions in the chat. Marissa will interrupt me as needed, and we should have plenty of time for those questions. First of all, just to share a little funny cartoon, this sort of sums up my life for the last probably 8 years or more, talking about whether students are going to use math in real life. And someone sent me this just thinking I'd appreciate it. I said, yes, I would. I'm going to share that. And basically, it's just saying that things have been that way for a long, long time, but that's just a common question that students ask. And I'll maybe go back and mention a little bit more about that as we go, but that just sort of sets the stage for kind of a lot of the things I'm going to talk to you about this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you're located. Oh yeah, sorry. Everywhere I go, every school I talk to, I always have to introduce my kids, and they always want me to introduce our dog too. So that's Charlotte, Jake, and Molly. They're doing homeschool from their bedrooms, and I had to lock the dog upstairs to make sure she doesn't bark at the mailman or anyone else while we're talking today. So got that task taken care of. Just some poll questions. I don't know, Marissa, if you want to do those sort of as we go, or if you want to just do them all at once, either way. But these are just some things I'd like to know about you just before we get too far into things.
Yep, I can go ahead and launch that. So I will, all right. So everyone should be seeing the poll. Go ahead and take a look at that and answer for us. All right. Lots of answers coming in. All right, gonna shut down the poll here. I think it's giving me a countdown of 10, so we'll do that. Okay, I'll share those results. So Brian, see those?
I can see them, yes, that's wonderful. So somewhat familiar with the Pathways movement, 65% of the folks said yes. Implemented something, 67 said yes. Co-requisites, that's kind of all over the place, and a few have implemented there as well. Great, that's good to know. Well, thank you for that part, and we'll keep that in mind as we make some comments here. So thanks again. So just to quickly go back through, I'll call it a quick timeline here. Let's I'm Brian Mercer, as Marissa mentioned, from Parkland College. That's the middle of Illinois, for those that aren't familiar with Parkland. And we've been on quite a wild journey in Illinois and at Parkland the last several years, just in terms of all the changes that we've made in our developmental math sequence and to some of our gateway courses. And like many of you have tried a number of things. Some have worked fairly well, some not so much. And so just kind of talk to you a little bit about that quickly, just to kind of walk through a little bit of the Pathways movement itself. This is one of those oldie but goodie jokes that I like to share. It's about every time I talk to instructors that for a long, long time, the math sequence, particularly the developmental math sequence, was pre-algebra, beginning algebra, intermediate algebra, and then you're college ready and you go STEM, non-STEM from there. Or as Jack Rotman like to call that, they're all really the various versions, various levels of pre-calculus, because a lot of the content in those courses, the pre-algebra, beginning algebra, and intermediate algebra, really seemed geared toward college algebra and that calculus path, and that really shaped a lot of the work that I've done. Really the last 8 years. Parkland at that time had once again, and I'm talking roughly 2010, 2011, had once again made up our minds that we were going to really try and tackle the developmental math problem and look into some big changes. And at that particular time, the math literacy movement was gaining some traction within AMATIC and other places. And what we did was to introduce that math literacy course into the developmental sequence. And I'll talk just a little bit about that. So math literacy for us at that first revision of our sequence, what it did was replace beginning and intermediate algebra for those non-STEM students. So it sort of served as a parallel track there, as you can see. And so that was sort of my first project with my partner in crime, Dave Sebecki. He and I worked on this math literacy textbook to sort of fit at that non-STEM level for those developmental students. That's actually the second edition of that particular project. And so just to say just a few things there, that course was a new approach for non-STEM developmental math students, as I already mentioned. Those students, what we found, as I said, when we sort of went down that committee road again at Parkland, one new revelation to us was that the vast majority of those students at that developmental level were on a non-STEM path. They had no desire to take college algebra. And yet we were forcing them to take intermediate algebra, which if you look at the content of that course, is largely geared toward college algebra. And so that course was designed, if you look at if you get really into the content of the course, there are a lot of beginning algebra topics, a few intermediate, and even some college algebra topics when you get into the linear and exponential growth kinds of things. But it was really more designed to prepare those students for that liberal arts math path, statistics, and just life. We tell students in that course that we want them to be responsible citizens. We want them to be critical consumers of the news. So with a focus on numeracy, functions, data analysis, we did a lot of reading, a lot of writing, a lot of work with technology, particularly Excel in that course. And it was very much group-based. And that's something that was new to a lot of people as we were talking about that course. I'll say I'm the first to admit I was I was a lecturer for a long, long time. My favorite classes to teach were intermediate algebra, college algebra, trig, calculus. And I thought I gave really dynamic, really energetic, but just wonderful lectures with group work mixed in, but I didn't rely heavily on it. And as we developed this course, we really wanted something to be very, very different. And the group work just sort of fell naturally out of that process. And that's just been really transformational to a lot of the ways that many of us teach our classes now. That said, we did design it to be flexible because we knew that not everyone was going to want to teach group work all the time. And so we'll maybe talk a little bit more about that as we go. Definitely happy to say that this course is supported by Alex. And what that means is you can assign homework problems, algorithmic versions of homework problems from the book in Alex, and then also let Alex do what Alex is very good at doing, which is the handling of prerequisites. And I'll say a little bit more about that a little bit later as well. Our second revision to our sort of flow chart, if you will, was to tweak it slightly and to say, you know, we used to offer, 15 to 20 sections each of beginning and intermediate algebra. And as we created this math literacy course, what that did was almost kill off beginning algebra. And so we said, all right, let's kill it. And so now the math literacy sits right there. Students who finish that math literacy course can go straight into that non-STEM gateway course. Or if we've inspired them to go on a more math intensive path, they can go from math literacy directly into intermediate algebra and beyond. So that's the way it fits for us right now. When I say, okay, I should also mention at the time we introduced this, just talking about Parkland, and Dave and I did a lot of work nationally to help other schools get this course implemented, and not everyone implements it the same way. So I do want to emphasize that just in terms of where it fits. But as we presented this at Parkland to our curriculum committee, we literally got tears and a standing ovation. I always like to share that. And I'm talking about from counselors and from other programs, and that sounds made up, but it's the honest truth. The math folks have, historically been the bad people on campus because we some people feel that we stand in the way of dreams, and we don't really want that, but we also want high standards, and so. As we did this was just very, very well received, but it was a massive change is one of the reasons I wanted to share that. And we thought, okay, we've made this colossal change, and it was a ton of work to get this implemented, even within Parkland, but within the state of Illinois to get it approved. And as we worked with other states, same thing. And in doing that, we thought, okay, we're done making any big changes. Well, that wasn't necessarily true. Some of you, I'm certain, are already, as I was showing this, saying, wait a minute, we don't have pre-algebra on our math literacy course. Well, we had to in Illinois to get it to fly, but now there's talk of getting rid of pre-algebra, at least as a prerequisite for that course. There's work within Illinois and within other states on moving those courses literally into the high schools and giving placement based on those high school courses. That's an ongoing initiative. And co-reqs, which is one of the things we'll talk a little bit more about this morning as well. That's kind of, we thought we were done making changes and now we're making more huge changes. And then 2020 happens and now we all have to become Zoom experts and move all of our classes online. So I've seen some flashes on the chat. Does anyone have any questions? This is usually a good stopping point when I do this sort of thing. Marissa, do you see any big questions jumping out that I should stop and answer at this particular point?
None from the chat that I can see. But I'm curious if anybody else kind of feels, in the same way or has had similar experiences in the co-rec piece of that. Go ahead and drop that in the chat if so. Let's see. One question is, how do you move intermediate algebra to high school when it's already supposed to be in high school?
I want to say no comment, but I guess what just a very, very brief version of what's happening. I agree completely, first of all. What's happening in Illinois, there is an initiative between the high schools and community colleges that was, I'll say, pushed by legislation. And we worked on building a transitional math course that, yes, it is very much of material that should be taught in high school, but it is something that is going to be tried and done in a way that both the community college folks and the high school folks feel comfortable with saying, if a student finishes this and completes this with a C or better, that we will work together and guarantee placement. And so that's the short version. And I'll be happy if you want to email me to share a lot more of what's going on. And by the way, so we're doing that with the intermediate algebra course. And we've also done that with the math literacy course. So, and it's a different level of placement for those two high school courses. And I don't mean to say that we're moving them entirely to the high school, but we're also offering them in the high schools. And that's a statewide initiative within Illinois.
Yeah. And looking at the chat, just some of the comments is that other instructors are experiencing something similar. All right.
Good. So two other big things came out of this sort of process. My co-author, Dave Sebecki, has a Math in Our World text that is a typical liberal arts math textbook. And so that sort of fits at that non-STEM level. And this was probably, I don't know, 2014, 2015, when this conversation happened. Dave was out in North Carolina talking to some folks about our math literacy course. And someone came up to him and said, "Hey, Dave, love the idea, love the approach of math literacy. Want to do something like that at the college level. Have you thought about taking the liberal arts math book and doing something along those lines with this activity approach?" And we were like, "That's brilliant." And so out of that conversation came the Math in Our World, a quantitative reasoning approach. And so that's an activities-based course similar to math literacy, but set at the college level. The topics that you see in that course are going to be very similar to what you'd see in any typical liberal arts math course. And then out of that conversation came, and now we're getting into more co-rec side of things, came specifically for North Carolina initially. They had a set of topics that, if you look at those topics, were sort of sitting in between the math literacy content and the liberal arts math or quantitative reasoning content. And they wanted to make it a college level course, but because it was pulling some of that content from the developmental level and then some content from the college level, that was really just a perfect fit for a co-requisite course. So that one is sort of our ready-made co-rec approach. The quantitative reasoning also has a co-rec that goes with it, and I'll talk about that right now. So the quantitative reasoning approach to the liberal arts math course is just maybe another way of saying it is like an evolution of liberal arts math. It's liberal arts math done in this activities-based approach. I'm going to show you an example here just shortly, just to see what kind of a lesson looks like. But it's this activities-based approach. One of my soapboxes, and in fact, what I presented on at AMATIC last year was, whether it's liberal arts math, whether it's quantitative reasoning approach to this Math in Our World or something in between, these courses are way more appropriate than college algebra for a terminal math course. And when I say soapbox, my new one, if you will, is the fact that there are still a number of schools, more on the four-year side, but still some two-year institutions, that have college algebra as effectively as a terminal course. And well, I don't want to get going on too much on that, but it just blows my mind, and it makes me sad almost that's the last experience that students have with math when they could have something way, way more appropriate. And that's where this one fits in. Again, set up group-based, again, designed to be flexible, ALEC support, which is awesome. And to get into the COREC side of things, ALEC is just probably the best tool that exists for handling those prerequisite skills if you want to do a co-requisite course. We've got prep skills built into this particular project and this particular book, and I'll talk a little bit specifically about those. But again, that's with the co-rec idea in mind. And if you want to do co-rec with that particular text, there's actually a full co-rec workbook that we've built to go with it. And I'll talk just a little bit more about that as well. The co-requisite approach, again, very similar in terms of the approach or the way it looks. It combines the essentials from math literacy with the most popular topics from QR. That course, again, way more appropriate than college algebra in terms of a terminal course, can often stand between students and a degree. And again, group-based, but with the idea that not every instructor is going to want to teach that group work approach all the time. And again, supported by ALEC. So that one is a co-rec book in and of itself, but the ALEC support is still a big key. Before I go any further, Marissa, do you have any other questions that we want to jump in and answer?
Yeah, there's one that just came through. How do you decide which students take the co-rec instead of math literacy?
So that's a good question. So for us at Parkland, we don't have that particular co-rec course, but I'll just talk in general the way we handle our college algebra co-rec. I just had to write this up for a state agency that was asking some questions. Some institutions have gone the route of really pushing co-recs and trying to push all students into co-recs. And in many cases, that's because they've been mandated to do so. We are not at that place yet, or I'll say currently. What we do is when students, so we have a multiple majors placement process. So there are many, many ways students can get into a college level gateway course. If they don't meet any of those and they take our placement test, they can either take the developmental course. So if it's non-STEM, that would be the math literacy course, or they could, if they're STEM, then they would either go math literacy or intermediate algebra. If they're close to that cutoff of the college level on the intermediate algebra side, they go ahead and take, they can either take the co-rec college algebra, or they can take the intermediate algebra, or we encourage them to study and take the placement test again. So that's how that's typically handled at places where it isn't mandated. Is you really want to, the co-rec to me is best suited for those students that are sort of close to those cutoffs of whatever placement tool you're using. Students that are really, really far away from a particular cutoff, I'm not so sure that the co-rec serves them well unless there's a lot of additional support. And again, there's where ALEC may come into play depending on the number of credit hours and how your institution has that co-rec structured. So it varies so widely in terms of how those things are implemented. That's kind of a broad stroke answer. So certainly if it's something specific that I can help with, Dave and I have worked with literally hundreds of schools on these sorts of things. So would be more than happy to help with that if you do have those kinds of questions.
Awesome.
Anything else there, Marissa, or should we move on?
You can go ahead and we'll.
Alrighty, sure.
Yeah.
So the goals for these courses, whether it's the math literacy or it is the quantitative reasoning or co-rec course. As we were building these things, we always kept this in mind. Alternate but still challenging. We never, ever, ever wanted to make an easier course. And in fact, many of our students say, good grief, this is a lot of work, but wow, has it changed a lot of my views on math. And that's really what we wanted. The math is all done in context. We wanted to develop critical thinking. I'm so proud of the fact that on the very first time I taught the math literacy course, as we were building the materials, I was thrilled when a student wrote on the evaluation, I thought this was a math course, not a critical thinking course. And I said, yes, that's exactly what I want you to get out of this class. I want you to think that it's a critical thinking course, not a math course. And we very much wanted to create a more engaging classroom experience. And with that, I want to share just very quickly this. And those of you, if you've ever seen me present, you've probably already seen this. But this is a observation tool that someone from the education department at the University of Illinois, which is, I'm in Champaign-Urbana, same community. So they heard about the new class we were doing, and somebody said, hey, can I observe your class? I said, sure. So he came over, sat up in the corner of my room, and I said, oh my gosh, that's really cool. Can you send me a contrast, a traditional class? So this was not what my class looked like. This is what a traditional class looks like. And so the students are in rows, and all these dots indicate, all these turquoise dots at the top of the screen around the side indicate where the instructor was standing. And the number indicates, or that corresponds with some note that he typed in the observation tool that he uses. And when he observed my class, this is what it looked like. And it's not quite to scale and not perfect, but it certainly captures what I do. When I teach any of these classes, I'm literally running from corner to corner, from desk to desk or table to table. You can see the students are arranged together in groups. Every once in a while, I'm at the front, but most of the time I'm scattered throughout the room, keeping students on task or helping, giving students a nugget of information, a little bit of a clue, and then moving on to the next group. And so it really creates a dynamic classroom environment, and it really, really changed so much about everything I do and believe as an instructor, quite frankly. And can talk about that for a long, long time, but I'm not going to. I see a lot of questions pop up, or is that just chat stuff? A lot of times people ask about this.
Yeah, I think it's good to pull in the one that just came up. How are you doing this with COVID, Brian? You want to talk about that briefly?
Give me just a second. I'll address that.
Okay, yep. Cool.
Yep. So very, very quickly, I do want to do this, and I think we should say that'll save us still plenty of time here. So what does this actually look like? And if this link works, hopefully it works and can get this to show up. Can you see that PDF now?
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. So just, I'm going to minimize that for just a second and say this. So what do the lessons look like? Every single lesson, Dave and I kind of have developed a formula. Every single lesson in all three of those books look almost identical. At the beginning, you're going to have prep skills, and we're going to have the objectives and some intro paragraph where students can read and get a sense for what the lesson's about. Then we'll have a class part and a group part, and that's where all the class activities happen. So sometimes class comes first, sometimes group comes first. We'll see a portfolio page, which is like a checklist of assignments for instructors and students. And at the end is the applications, which can be assigned online through Alex or done through paper. So there's just kind of a quick summary, and I'll kind of zip through just an example just so that you see and maybe some of the things that I've been talking about, and it's easier just if you see something to do this. So as Dave and I wrote these lessons, what we did was we wrote the lesson first, and then we went back and said, all right, what are the prerequisite skills the student really needs to do this? And so that's what we put together in terms of prep skills. And so there you'll see just sort of a list along with maybe a quick example or explanation of each of the prep skills, then some prep skills questions that students can practice. The answers are provided within the lesson. And then students can at least get a sense of, am I ready to do whatever it is we're gonna do today? Those kinds of assignments can also be done online, but sometimes some students just wanna quickly do them on paper and just kind of check and get ready for whatever it is that's gonna happen that day. Then, as I said, so here's the start of the lesson with some objectives, some introductory paragraph, and then the fun starts. So here we see a class banner. And again, sometimes class comes first, sometimes group comes first. The only distinction really is sometimes the class part requires maybe a little bit more handholding or a little bit more where the instructor might want to say something either to one group at a time or to the whole class at once. And the group part is a little bit more on the discovery learning side of things. That said, if you watch me teach, sometimes you wouldn't even know a difference. And so we've got groups of questions. You'll see space for students to write answers. And I'm just going to kind of fly through some of these things and just pause every once in a while. All the stuff in green, that's stuff that only instructors would see in the instructor version. This would be blank for students to fill out. You'll see lots of scaffolding, lots of space for students to write answers. Did you get it questions? That's just from time to time. There's a natural breaking point. And that's when I talk to faculty about this course in terms of how you space things out or how you pace the class, how you keep one group from getting too far ahead or too far behind. About every, I'm making this up because it really varies, but every 4, 5, 6, maybe 8 questions, you'll see a did you get it? And that's where I might stop my groups and say, okay, everybody go to the board or everybody get up and go to a different group or just call timeout and make sure that we're all at a stopping point. If you're that group that's way ahead, you can do these did you get it questions. If you're not ahead, don't worry about it. Do these when you get home. So these are just sort of a quick check on making sure students understand what it is we've been working on. I did want to show just this, the fact that it has a solved example. If you look at Dave's liberal arts math textbook, that would be look like a traditional text in that you'll see here's the section 1-1. You'll see 5 to 8 solved examples followed by some here's some skills problems and the application problems, you know, the homework part, the only part that many students even look at. With our first edition of both the quantitative reasoning and the co-requisite quantitative reasoning, we had no solved examples at all. And as we got feedback from folks, they said, you know, it'd be nice if there were some solved examples. It would help with pacing and help with a little bit more guidance on some of the things. So we kind of went to a hybrid approach where there are occasional solved examples that you'll see that sort of look like a traditional book, but then they follow immediately with back to the group work activities based problems. So wanted to point those out. That was something new we did from the second edition. I'm just kind of jumping through here. There you see the group portion of that lesson. So again, students are still doing this in groups. Technology, I wanted to stop here and say that we do a lot with Excel, whether it is the math literacy course or the quantitative reasoning, the college level courses. And we understand that's maybe intimidating to students and maybe even intimidating to instructors. We've got lots of resources built in there. So just wanted to point that out. Anytime there's new Excel topics or ideas, there's a video that goes right along with it, sort of walks students through whatever that particular skill is. So now jumping through, I'm gonna jump probably quite a bit now. We're doing pie charts and bar graphs in this particular lesson. There's the portfolio page that I mentioned. So that particular page is like a checklist for students and sort of a menu of assignments for instructors. So you can say, here's a technology assignment. Here's some online homework that you can assign. Application, that's on the next page. And then reflections. Dave and I are big on little writing assignments. So these reflections questions are things we ask students to write up. And you know, when you're teaching these kinds of classes, some instructors might choose to assign all of those things. Some instructors might choose just to assign a few. And to not forget about the COVID question, So a couple of things. Now that you've seen what the lesson looks like, what we do for our, I've got a funny slide later, but I'll just spill the beans now. What we do for teaching these courses online is we have, so Zoom has these nifty things called Zoom rooms. So for our synchronous online classes, we still have students actually get in groups and work through very similar to what we're doing on campus. And for us, this particular semester, most of our classes or many of our classes are online. Some of our classes are sort of in a hybrid approach to where they see one another like once a week, and then they're online synchronously the rest of the time. And so for those classes in particular, they're using the Zoom rooms and doing things almost identically to what they would be if they were on campus. For the asynchronous online classes, what we do is we use the discussion boards. We also have a bunch of videos already made of everything that you've seen here being worked out. And so we use the discussion boards combined with the solution videos, combined with still some Zoom sessions to get as much interaction as possible. If you saw my little colored dot, dot, dot grid map, teaching this class on campus, I tell instructors all the time, really is just one of the true joys in my teaching career. And teaching this class online, while it is not nearly as fun, it still provides quite an engaging experience for students. And so we've been able to pull it off fairly well, and all the resources that we've had built already paid some big dividends for us as we had to move to the COVID semester. So that kind of wraps up the with the portfolio pages. Then we've got some answers to some things. And at the end, then there are the applications. And again, those can be assigned online or they can be assigned on paper. I can tell you what I've sort of fallen into is a little bit of a blend. I'm still a big believer, as I like to see our students work. I like to see their work written out. And so even for teaching this class online, what I do is I'll still have students handwrite some of their solutions. So maybe I'll pick out my favorite two or three from the applications list and have them turn those in using Genius Scan or any of the other ways of turning in handwritten work digitally, but then still do a lot of the heavy lifting using Alex to assign the homework online. Okay, so I wanted you to at least see that, just because I talk about a lot of those things. There's my, yes, we can teach these courses online. It sounded crazy at first, but yes, we were able to do it. And that was my excuse just to put a picture of the Cardinals in here, because yes, I'm a big Cardinal fan. It definitely takes a team. As we've worked with states everywhere, or instructors everywhere, we're seeing faculty working on developing these courses, which is fantastic. We're seeing administrative support, which is very, very important. Sometimes we're seeing legislators get involved to a way where it's not helpful, and I'm really sorry if that applies to you. The reason I share this, though, is if you're in a place where your legislators haven't yet told you you have to do some of these things, please be a leader. Whether it's the math literacy course or pushing for non-STEM appropriate options in place of college algebra, these things are happening, and there's a lot of momentum for them to occur. And I just really, really encourage people to be leaders and to help make them happen in a way that's faculty led, not a way that's legislatively led, because that just, it never seems to go well from my experience. And the last thing I want to share, and then I'll still save us a few minutes for some questions, is truly maybe why we got into this in the first place. We are seeing just about every school that I've worked with personally. When I go back and talk to the instructors, I get one story or another of these students who tried some of these courses that not appropriate, maybe is the right word. I don't know how you want to say it, but years and years ago, it would have been offensive to say, why are you making people take college algebra? And now we're way beyond that point. Or why are you making people take intermediate algebra? Now we're way, way beyond that point. And as we've developed courses that are more appropriate for non-STEM students who just want a college degree, they don't need complex rational expressions, which are great things, but they're just not appropriate for a lot of students. And we hear these stories of students who are able to get a degree and get a job or get a scholarship or whatever it is. And, you know, it's just, it's awesome. It's awesome to be a part of. So just consider that as you think about some of these things. That's my contact information. And I wanted to share that picture as well. My wife makes fun of me because I'm not quite looking at the camera. That was my wife and I in New York on March 7th of 2020, which is mind-blowing. We were there when New York was declared a state of emergency. I was there actually presenting to some instructors about some of these courses, and that's the last in-person thing I've done, I think. So we're in crazy times now. So I think I managed to save 4 or 5 minutes if you have more questions, Marissa. I'm sure hopefully we've got more coming in.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for going through that, Brian. One of the more general questions, and I think this is about, if I understand it correctly, the course materials that you've written, any concerns about reading and writing levels for incoming students?
Yes. So yes, we've been asked that question. The math literacy one, as we wrote that, and as you recognize that particular lesson, that particular lesson was from the co-requisite approach, and there's a lot of stuff that was from the math literacy along with a little bit of higher level stuff that was in there in that particular one. The writing level, McGraw-Hill had some folks peek at, do an analysis, and I think it came back around the seventh grade, if I remember correctly, but we can check and confirm that. But I remember it was in a level that we were comfortable with. The writing level for the college level course, I don't remember if we've actually had it analyzed. My guess is it's gonna be a little bit higher and that's certainly okay. But that's a valid question. And one of the things that we talk to instructors a lot about, you know, there's some more reading and certainly some writing required for that course. But if you look at the blocks of text, they're not overly long. And this is certainly one of Dave's strengths. It's a pretty relaxed, pretty comfortable writing style. It's not intended to be stiff, if for lack of better words. So I think accessibility was certainly something we had in mind as we built the materials. And I think they're written at a level that is appropriate and accessible and still covers the content in an appropriate way as well.
Great. Yep. And then there were a couple of folks who were asking about how many additional credits add to, speaking to the co-rec specifically, how does the credit work with that?
So what we see typically is the liberal arts math class or the QR class is typically a 3-hour class. Most co-requisites, they make it a 4-hour class. They add one extra hour. And if you look at the co-requisite approach, the book that was written to be a co-rec book, that one has 4 units in it. And I think it works out nicely to make that a 4 credit class. Certainly, you know, there's room for flexibility there in terms of just cut material out if you don't want to cover all of it, but that one, that's what we see most often.
Okay, great. All right, I think that's all we have time for. I know we're at time, but I know Brian, you've got your contact information up there for any questions that we weren't able to answer today. We will follow up with those that are in the chat that we weren't able to get to But yeah, thanks so much, Brian, for walking us through all of this information. Really helpful and really timely. I know it's a struggle for instructors who are, you know, having to rethink their courses, maybe go co-rec, and then, you know, of course, teach online. So thank you so much for your time today. Sherry has shared the information on the other sessions that are going on right after this one, and also the trivia information. So we hope that you'll join us starting at 4 Central. We've got the link and the meeting ID and also the password. So you'll need that to get into trivia today, and hopefully look forward to seeing all of you guys. So thanks so much for joining and have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you.